Okay, great. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, George. How are you?
I'm doing great, and we're here today to have a discussion about the mortgage marketplace. And to do so, we've brought along one of our experts. He's an affiliate lender with our company and one of our preferred lenders that we work with on first-time buyers primarily, but also many other buyers that are seeking to get a purchase rolling in the marketplace. And today's guest is Ron Riccio. Ron's the president and the owner of Chicagoland Home Mortgage Services. Is that correct, Ron?
That's correct.
That's good.
Correct.
And first of all, Ron, we're going to focus today on talking about that first-time buyer scenario, because that is one of the key elements that we see that's been driving the marketplace for the last few years. And also, it's kind of right down the pike here for us from the perspective of getting our business rolling and the core business for our agent base. And you've been very responsive in helping us do that. But before we hit right in on first-time buyers, why don't you just give us a little bit of background about how you became the owner of this company?
Well, thank you for the nice intro, George. So a little background on myself. I have been in the mortgage industry now for 28 years, and I've had my own small company now for 17 years. So I started back in 2001. I am a mortgage broker, which means that I work with many different lenders to provide customers with the best possible scenario, best rates and situations for their particular scenario. And you know, first time home buyers now, as you said, are a critical point of our market. And we've got a couple of really nice products that potentially can help first-time home buyers get in with a very low down payment. There's actually two products. There's an FHA product that's 3.5% down, and then there's also a conventional product that is 3% down. What's important about the conventional product at 3% down and very different from the FHA product is that you can use that to buy any condo throughout the city and the suburbs. FHA has to be an FHA-approved condominium. So it really has proven to be something where first-time home buyers don't have to come up with a lot of money in order to purchase. They can get into these properties. It allows them to start building up some equity and allows them to own their own little piece of America, a little piece of the American dream.
I know our experience in working with individuals that want to get into condos that have a low down payment and maybe just in the process of building their credit scores. Sometimes they just don't have enough on a conventional scenario. They don't have necessarily the 5% down or the closing costs, or they may be just a little bit short on that. So it's great on the scenarios with conventional opportunities there in the condo market. What percentage would you say of the condos are FHA approved in our marketplace? Just a kind of a ballpark guess.
Well, I tell you, it is less than 10%. It is a very, very low number. So we really typically don't see many FHA approved condos. It's a very small amount.
Right. And that's been my experience too, but I always like to hear from the expert that's seeing it on a day-to-day basis. And the scenarios that we see then is that many individuals come in and we are dealing with them potentially on the basis of maybe purchasing a single family home for economic reasons or just for personal choice. Many times they say, well, let's look at condos as an option. And that many times is an entry point into the marketplace for those folks, and to have that opportunity to work in a conventional environment. Let's kind of address maybe some of the costs that are involved, the cost savings of working with a conventional scenario versus a FHA scenario.
Sure, absolutely. So with FHA, you're going to pay what's called upfront MIP, mortgage insurance premium. So that is 1.75% of what the loan amount is. So if you have a $100,000 loan amount, you're going to be paying $1,750 in this upfront cost for the mortgage insurance, which they charge at closing, and they typically wrap this into the mortgage. It's not something that has to be paid out of pocket for the customer. On a conventional loan, there is no upfront charge for mortgage insurance. You just pay it monthly. FHA also has a monthly amount that's due, and typically FHA, their mortgage insurance premium is typically a little bit higher in price on a monthly basis. The difference between those two is that usually FHA allows for some lower credit scores, some lower FICO scores. But a couple of the products that we have now, one is called the Home Ready and the other one's called the Home Possible, both which are 3% down, allow borrowers to go all the way down to a 640 FICO score, which was something that wasn't available just you know, a year ago.
That sounds great. And what percentage of borrowers would you say, if you looked at the spectrum from bottom to top on credit score, where does a 640 credit score land someone? Are they in the top 50% of credit scores? Are they in the top 75% of credit scores? Where do they need to be in order to be able to qualify with a 640?
So they're typically, I mean, 640s, we're probably seeing those in the probably in the 50 percentile, right in the middle in terms of where the credit scores are at. But again, it still allows them to be able to qualify for this. There's actually special PMI that is available for these products, these 3% down first-time home buyer products, which allows people not to have to pay an exorbitant amount of money for PMI. The nice thing is, and you had talked about closing costs, is that lenders will also offer a what's called a lender credit. So typically, we may be seeing closing costs in a transaction between title fees, homeowners insurance, attorney's fees, and lender costs that could range anywhere between $5,000 to $7,000 depending upon where somebody's buying, if there's transfer taxes, such as like in the city of Chicago. Lenders now allow and have been giving for many years what's called a lender credit. So somebody can actually buy something 3% down. They can take an interest rate where they'll get a credit from the lender that could cover the majority, if not all, of the closing costs. So the entry level and entry point for first-time home buyers has become really, really good because they don't have to come up with as much money as they once needed.
That's great. That's great. And one of the key things that we've always looked at in being in the real estate business my entire career is the first-time buyer question, well, should I continue to rent for a while, or is it better for me to buy? And again, cycles run in the market with ups and downs, but generally speaking, in my long-term experience over the long haul, because real estate is definitely a long-term investment, individuals that can get in a leveraged scenario with using as little as 3% to 5% of their of the transaction totals can get have the advantage of having leverage work for them and also having some appreciation work in the marketplace. I know that we've seen this year tremendous spring activity, and as a result, from 2017 to 2018, spring to spring, we've seen increases as minimal as 5% and as high as 10% in certain marketplaces. So maybe you can talk. I know you've got the strong financial background from being at DePaul University, correct, along the way.
That's right. I forgot to mention that, my old alma mater, DePaul.
Yeah, and I was there too, of course, many years before you. But the solid education that DePaul offers, I'm sure, has served you really well and has assisted you. But I've always appreciated that you take a look at things analytically from a financial perspective, because we're helping individuals try to make a good decision. So what's your thoughts on having individuals be able to try to crack into the market at their first opportunity?
Well, we always think, especially now, that this is a great opportunity for people to be looking to make a purchase at this point in time. So rents are at all-time highs. If somebody's purchasing now, interest rates are still at historical lows. So I started back in 1991. My first transaction I did was a 30-year fixed at 9 7/8. So we've gone from that point all the way down to 3.5 or 3 3/8 on a 30-year fixed. Now we're in the mid-4s, which historically speaking is still great. So as you had mentioned, there was probably a 5 to 10% increase in prices from last year to this year, depending upon the area. So you know, we tell people all the time, look, home prices are going to continue to go up. We're going to see interest rates that are potentially going to be going up here too. So it's a great point of entry now if you're looking to get in. And of course, you've got the ability to write off your interest, to write off your taxes. So it's a great tax. It's a really nice tax haven for individuals to buy. And then they're building up, of course, they're building up some equity. So they're building up, excuse me, they're building up their own personal portfolio here by being able to pay down their own mortgage as opposed to paying down a landlord's mortgage. They get the write-off. They're building up enough equity so that maybe potentially down the line they're going to turn around and be a move-up buyer instead of a first-time home buyer. Right.
That's a good segue to my next point is that when we were trying to give some insights to those first-time buyers coming in, one of the things that we often see in the marketplace is individuals trying to make a decision for, say, their first five-year term. And that might be for their first condo purchase. It could also be a scenario where they're buying a starter home.
Sure.
And then ultimately, they oftentimes will say, well, let's say on the condo side, well, if we buy the condo, do we have the ability to, if our economics improves and our salaries are good, could we potentially convert and hold this condo as a possible investment property down the road? So what are the scenarios and the pitfalls of trying to take a look at that as part of the analysis?
Well, that's a great point, because mortgages right now are the yield curve is pretty flat. So somebody saying, hey, I'm going to be in this condo for 3 to 5 years and then I'm going to move up, potentially want to sell or buy something else. If somebody says to me, hey, I'm looking for maybe an adjustable rate, they're really not that much better than a 30-year fixed rate. And I always kind of talk to my customers, too, about potentially having this investment opportunity come about later on. The way mortgages work is that you have to be in that property as an owner-occupant for 1 year. After 12 months, you can turn around and rent the property. So I often tell folks, look, if you're buying something now, even with 3.5% or 3% down, and you live there for a while, and then you want to turn around and buy something else, as long as you're buying your next property as a primary residence, you can turn around and buy it with minimal down. You can buy it with 5% down, and you can leave the condo that you have as a rental property for yourself. The interest rate will be good. You're going to have, again, you had the low point of entry with the low down payment, and potentially can be a long-term investment for you, whether it be for college education for your children or if it's going to be just a retirement investment that you're going to be cashing out a little bit later.
Right. Yeah, I think one of the things that we always can look at when we look at the real estate market is that we can have the ability to take control of our own destiny, and the ability to pay off properties. When you first get started, you're looking at, say, a 30-year scenario. It's a long time. However, abilities to prepay, abilities to put things in on a 15-year amortization schedule could tie in real nicely with a first child going to college, assuming an 18 to a 20-year cycle on that. So painting that scenario then, getting in with a low-down payment, still being in a position that you have that flexibility to turn it into an investment property down the road gives you a lot of flexibility. I would raise the proviso that important to take a look at the condo associations scenarios, because certain associations may not permit rentals. They may have only owner-occupied, although that's starting to change based on the marketplace. Also, some may have caps on it, meaning that there's a certain percentage that can be allocated towards rentals, and those are just factors to take a look at as an individual makes that that condo purchase. But certainly, you know, we look at that as we get them started. As we look at our first-time buyer, you know, coming in, we also have the other end of the spectrum, which is the first-time buyer that's maybe on the upper end of the spectrum. So let's take a little have a short conversation on our upper limits of what we can do with either an FHA product or a conventional product and still stay within the normal underwriting scenarios.
So, I mean, some of the normal underwriting scenarios would be if a first-time home buyer has 5, 10, or 20% down to where they can use a conventional product. And yet conventional is just means it's not backed by the government. FHA, which stands for the Federal Housing Authority, means that the government is actually insuring the lender that you're going to be paying on this. And if somebody defaults on it, then they're insurance covers the lender for the portion of the down payment that they were not able to come up with that calculated or ended up being the 20% that they were not able to give. So conventional buyers and a conventional loan right now allows for someone, if they have 20% down, they don't have to have PMI, which means private mortgage insurance. And again, private mortgage insurance is needed If you have less than 20% down, it covers the lender for that portion. So in the event the buyer defaults, the lender pays, the PMI pays the lender for the difference on the down payment that the buyer was not able to come up with. So conventional loans right now are a lot easier to qualify for than they were just probably 5 or 6 years ago. They've expanded qualifying ratios. They've changed some of their underwriting guidelines to make things a little bit easier. So it's a great time for somebody to be able to try and purchase right now, because underwriting guidelines are a lot more flexible. Interest rates are good, and home prices are going up. So it's a good time to get in to buy something where you're gonna see some quick appreciation.
That's good. What we've seen here in our marketplace, and I'm sure that every market is going to be similar. You just have to change or take a look at the price levels on each. What we've experienced here is that once we reach the point of first-time buyers being exhausted in the market, and we have no more first-time buyers up to a certain price level, then there can be a certain softness sometimes in the market when you get to certain pricing tiers. And in our specific marketplace, where we're at, our first-time buyers typically would be in the range of anywhere between $250,000 up to maybe $300,000. And that's kind of the sweet spot for the marketplace. And there's a lot of competition, and there are not that many homes that are for sale because of them selling quickly. As you just elevate a little bit and you get to the next level of the marketplace, and in our market it might be, say, homes between $400,000 to $450,000 to $500,000, then oftentimes those buyers that are out there may be at a competitive advantage. And every market is different. I'm currently working with a buyer up in the North Shore area, and we have the same scenarios, except our first-time buyer levels up there may stretch up to $400,000, for example, and then the softness in the market might occur at $600,000 to $1 million.
Sure.
But in any event, it's still the same principles. It's just applying some different numbers. So what have you seen lately with your upper limit types of individuals trying to get them qualified at the higher-end loans?
So again, we've got some lenders that we work with that now have expanded their loan limit from the 453. We now have a lender that goes all the way up to $679,000 for a conforming interest rate. So instead of it being a jumbo, the interest rate is actually the same as it was for a conforming limit. So the conforming limits go up to $453,100, and before it turns into a jumbo. We have a lender now that goes up to $679,000. So that's allowed for us to be more competitive in our marketplace and to pass that on to customers that are looking to buy above that $453,000 loan limit, or have a loan amount, that's more than $453,100. What we're seeing for those buyers, as well as for the buyers that are in those lower brackets, is that we're trying to get them, we're emphasizing them that they need to get pre-approved, they need to be ready to go. And in some cases, we actually start the actual loan process by underwriting it, by doing their verifications in terms of employment, assets, a credit check, of course, so that they are better positioned to strike with an offer quickly and to be able to close a lot faster. Because as you had just mentioned, it's a very competitive marketplace, especially if it's a property that's priced right. There's typically, we've seen a lot of properties that get multiple offers on them. So we're doing everything that we can now with the products that we have, not only to position them to be able to get a very competitive interest rate, but also to have them ready, set and ready to go so that they can put in an offer quickly, typically be able to do a closing in less than 30 days so that their offers look more attractive than the competition that's out there.
Yeah. And you've attended several of our office meetings here and had an opportunity to provide your insights to our staff and to our agent base over the years. And we truly appreciate the expertise that you bring as you come into the office itself. I think one of the key things that we're always attempting to do is to analyze the marketplace and stay on top of things. I've told our agents in the office that the realtor's best friend is a top-notch loan officer, a top-notch real estate, a top-notch mortgage broker that can analyze and can turn things around quickly. Oftentimes, I can't tell you the number of times we will meet someone, and one of the first things that we do after our initial counseling session is get them to our lender to make sure that we know and that they know exactly what's going to be going on with that loan process. And that's where you come in. Oftentimes, we'll talk on a Saturday night or a Sunday morning or any time during the week. We are not 7-Eleven, but sometimes we feel like that our business never closes. We want to be responsive, correct, to our client base. And then ultimately, once we put the call into you and we say, Joe and Susie are going to be giving you a call or follow up with them, then how do things work over on your side, Ron?
So typically, and like you said, it's we're not a 9-to-5. I give everyone, customers and realtor referral partners, are my cell numbers. So there's many times. Oftentimes, I'm talking to people in the evening and on weekends, so it's commonplace for our market. So typically, when we get a call from a customer in order to get pre-qualified or find out what they can be approved for, we're taking about 10 minutes of their time. We're taking some personal information. We're taking some employment, asset, and income information. We're running their credit, and typically, if it's a borrower or borrowers that are employed by a company that have a W-2, it's a pretty quick process. Usually within about 15 minutes, we can tell them what they're approved for, depending upon their FICO scores, which product is going to work best. Will it be FHA? Will it be conventional? Will it be the 3% down conventional Home Ready or Home Possible program? And then we will generate what's called a pre-approval letter, and that pre-approval letter will send to yourself or the agent as well as the borrowers so that you have that ready to put an offer in on a property when that time comes.
Yeah, I think that's a critical part of the process, and the strength of the pre-approval letter cannot be underestimated. There's been several times where I've presented offers on behalf of a client, and the listing broker on the other side would say, "Oh boy, I'm glad you have Ron working in on this transaction with us, because
we know
Ron's and his company are very reliable." And reliability is one of the things that we have in my own personal business. A substantial portion of my business is representing sellers, so if I have a lender pre-approval from a very credible lender, then I know that there's a very high likelihood that the transaction is going to get closed. There's never a 100% in anything in life, because there's some little things that can pop up along the way that are not anticipated. But as part of the process, when you qualify these folks right away and they're getting started with it, you've already done their credit, so you have a pretty good snapshot on how things look up front, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So I will never issue a pre-approval unless we've run someone's credit, because that's the main ingredient in this pre-approval process. So once we have that, once we know what their income is, we try to do as much due diligence up front to make sure that pre-approval is as accurate as it can be. And then we start, again, there's times when we do start the actual loan process at that time. Now, if you've got a self-employed borrower that has business tax returns and personal returns that we have to get, those incomes are averaged. That's a much more involved process, so that takes a little bit longer. They have to get over some documentation to us in order for us to be able to determine what their income is and what they can qualify for. And even for folks that have multiple rental properties, so when someone has a Schedule E on their tax returns that has multiple rental properties, there could be depreciation and other items that are on there that could show a substantial loss. And we have to run it. We actually have a formula that we use where we take each individual property, run it through this formula to see if they truly have a loss or if they have a gain, which could determine what kind of income we have, which will determine, how high we can go on a pre-approval.
Sure, sure. Well, tracking this process for this first-time buyer that's brand new and hopefully listening today very attentively to find out some good information. Once we go under contract on it, at that point, we have the pre-approval. We negotiate as your real estate broker the transaction. It is then subject to attorney approval in the standard forms that we have from MLS. It also includes a standard 5-day inspection clause. So it's 5 business days for inspection, 5 business days for attorney approval. That's a great topic for another day. We won't talk about that. But ultimately, once we've completed that part of the process, now we're in full-fledged processing and trying to get the loan completed. In the contract itself, there is a contingency date typically that states that someone needs to apply for the loan by a certain time frame. And oftentimes that's 10 days or 15 days after the acceptance. And our normal time frames that we see on typical transactions could run anywhere from 30 days on the short side up to 60 days on the longer end, with probably the average being about 45 days on it. Does that seem fairly normal for what you're seeing in the marketplace, Ren?
It is. We're typically seeing closings within 30 to 45 days. It used to be more common that we would see a 45-day close, and now we're seeing more commonly 30-day closes.
Okay.
Excuse me. So we're seeing some shorter turnaround times. I think maybe people would be more competitive. They're looking to do that. So it used to be that 30-day closes were tough to do. Now it's the norm. Now it's trying to close transactions if we need to in 15 to 20 days, which we've been able to do. So if we have to really run, we can. But typically, 30 to 45 days is more than norm now.
Is your norm. Yeah, it's funny how the business runs full cycle. When I first started in the business, many years ago, that normal time frame was 21 to 30 days. And loans got done and loans were approved. Of course, there wasn't as much detail on it, and many loans were not sold into the secondary market. Lenders could get things done really quickly. And then as the paperwork mounted on transactional deals, and then we were in a position really where it started to expand. So it's kind of good to hear that. I think competition is bringing that about too. We all need to improve our efficiencies, and sellers and buyers oftentimes, if they want to close a little bit more quickly, it's good to know that we can get those things done, you know, for them. The current transaction that we're working on right now, I think that we structured that for about 45 days initially at buyers and sellers' request, and then ultimately completed working with you probably in 21 days. So we've been sitting on the sidelines kind of on that one, just waiting for a close, which hopefully is going to happen this coming week, assuming things go well. But as the final part of this process, too, we're working our way through you doing your analytics there, any processing needs that are to be completed on your behalf. Last step along the way is usually the appraisal. And sometimes it comes earlier in the game and sometimes a little bit later. But that's a part of the loan process. So could you give us just a short idea on how that appraisal process works?
Sure, absolutely. So an appraisal is done after someone has applied with us and they've received what's called the loan estimate. So the loan estimate typically is generated within 3 business days once somebody has locked in and they've applied with us. That estimate just kind of breaks down all the potential costs that somebody would need to pay for at closing. So once that loan estimate is signed, we can then go ahead and order the appraisal. Now, an appraisal is ordered from each individual lender. So each individual lender has what's called their own appraisal management company. We do not order them directly.
Okay.
So we order them through this appraisal management company. That management company then picks an appraiser on their list of appraisals. They basically are on a rotation. And we don't know who the appraiser is going to be. We actually find out who the appraiser is once we get the report. That appraiser contacts the listing agent. They set up an appointment to do the appraisal. They'll actually go out, inspect the property, take some interior, exterior photos, and then it's typically about 2 to 3 business days after they've inspected it that they'll supply us with about a 15-page report with pictures and all of their information as to how they came to the actual appraised value.
Good. Good. And then that's pretty much a last stop along the way. Once all of that paperwork is completed, including the appraisal,
it is.
Then you're in kind of last hurrah there.
Yeah. So typically we'll get the formal paperwork started to where we submit the file in the underwriting. Most times we are not ordering an appraisal until the file is out of attorney's review. So typically that's, you know, but when somebody's doing an inspection or if they're negotiating on some issues during the appraisal or seeing if the property is in fact worthy of them buying it, we're waiting for the okay from the buyers as well as the attorney to say, okay, go ahead. We are going to, in fact, move forward with this transaction. Go ahead and order the appraisal. So it is one of the last steps in the process, because by that time, we've already submitted the file for underwriting. We've already gotten the file approved. We're working on minor conditions at that point with borrowers. And usually appraisal comes in at the last part of the journey and the mortgage process.
And then it's just home free, making sure we get final walkthrough, which the brokers will handle to make sure that the home is left in the condition that was stated and deemed as appropriate in the contract. And that's usually removing all the items of personal property that are not part of the contract itself. And we do the walkthrough, we go to the closing. Oftentimes, Ron, although he's a busy guy and the owner of the company, we'll see Ron pop in at the closings to make sure that things are going very smoothly along the way, and that's always much appreciated. And then hopefully we're getting keys for our for our happy buyer at the closing, and hopefully a happy seller too, walking away with their proceeds check. So some final thoughts. I know, Ron, you're bringing 28 years of experience to the table, and again, as one of our trusted and preferred vendors that we work with, one of our partners at Weikert Realtors All Pro. Final thoughts on the process and where you're at today and where you're at with your company.
So we're very excited about where we're at right now. I think we have, we've really mastered the loan process in terms of start to finish and getting it done and getting it done quickly. We're really happy with the variety of different lenders that we work with. As a mortgage broker, I'm able to work with many different lenders that offer many different products at many different price points. So we are able to move, we're able to offer more different products than our larger competitors. We're able to move faster. And we're really excited on how automated things are now, and how quickly and how convenient we can make it for customers. I don't think we've ever been in a position in my 28 years where things have run so smoothly and so quickly for borrowers. We're able to actually do more for them with less time and less hassle for them. So we're really excited about that. And we see some great things for the real estate and mortgage market in the years to come.
I think that's why your company and our company are a great match in the marketplace. We're, I think, both small enough to be able to give top personal service to the client, but large enough to be able to provide the efficiencies that are necessary in today's market and the competitive pricing that's also sought after in the marketplace, too. So we really appreciate, again, the opportunity to have you stop by today and have this short discussion about individuals that are first-time buyers in the Chicagoland real estate market. Thanks, Ron.
My pleasure. Thank you.